Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Oh, yeah, the moon is not off limits to the military. How many times in the last couple of weeks have we had guests on who've talked about the dossiers that are filled with plans at the Pentagon? Well, one of the guys who knows about that is Vince Houghton. He's the historian and curator of the International Spy Museum, and he's the author of a new book called Nuking the Moon, a wild tour of missions and schemes that almost happened but didn't, because they were either too dangerous or expensive or just, you know, nutcase crazy. Vince, I'm glad to have you here. Interesting choice of names for your book, Nuking the Moon. Was this a real plot or plan?
It was, yeah, a program in the late 1950s to, not to blow it up, that would be silly. This is far less silly.
Okay.
In the scheme of things. This was an attempt after Sputnik in 1957, when the Soviets launched the first satellite into space and really scared everyone. And made the world question who was the top dog when it came to science and technology.
Right.
We here in the United States had always enjoyed that, of being the kind of scientific pioneers, but now the Soviets had beaten us at our own game, so we needed something big. And the plan was to detonate a thermal nuclear weapon on the moon so that everyone in the world could see at the same time that we were really still the big kids on the block.
And what happened?
Well, this is an Air Force program, and they actually got some high-level scientists to work on this. The head of the program, the man named Leonard Riefel, actually later on would become the deputy director of the Apollo program. So this is not some tinfoil hat wearing wackadoodle scientist in the basement of the Pentagon. This is a real deal guy.
Wow.
And actually he brought on a couple people. One was a grad student by the name of Carl Sagan, who helped work on this program as well, named some people might recognize.
No kidding.
And it turned out, in the end that I actually have no idea why the program ended. And that's one of the fun things about this book, is that it's intelligence history, which means that we know a lot about some of these cases, but there's still a lot that's still classified. There's a lot of supposition about why this program ended. I think in many cases, my favorite answer to this is probably that the Apollo program itself is the reason, is that the political decision to put men on the moon and during the Kennedy administration is what probably caused this program to end. But
change
there's
no the direction.
Good answer to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the
direction.
The one thing that jumped out, and this one seems ingenious to me, and I bet it's been done before, was the idea from the CIA to take a house cat and somehow bug it to spy on the Russians.
Yeah, so this is Project Acoustic Kitty, and yes, that's the real name. 1960s, the CIA was struggling with finding ways to create effective audio listening devices or bugs. And the idea was, let's turn a common house cat into a covert listening device. And that doesn't mean taking its collar and putting a bug on the collar. No, that means surgically implanting a covert listening device inside the cat. So you plant the power pack inside the abdomen. The microphone went up into the ear canal and was used as kind of and then the antenna was in the tail. Where else, right? And then you would train these cats to kind of walk up inside Soviet embassy somewhere in the world or here in Washington, D.C., and just kind of sit down and listen into conversations, because no one pays attention to cats kind of wandering around. I mean, you can imagine the cat may even jump up and lie down in the lap of one of the Soviet spies, and the Soviet scratching it behind the ears, not realizing that he was scratching a CIA agent.
So did this happen?
So the key is, you might have heard me say, train the cat. Mm-hmm. That might have, you know,
there's the problem.
Rang a bell. Yeah, there it is, right? Anyone who spent 10 seconds with the cat realizes that you're not training a cat anytime soon. I think that the CIA had no real trouble with the technology behind this. They effectively created a covert listening device out of a cat. Mm-hmm. It was getting it to do what we wanted it to. That was the real problem they ran into. And after spending a lot of our tax dollars, they realized that this is probably not going to work out all that well.
Wow. You know, one of the other stories that jumped out at me, because I used to live in Texas, and everybody would go to Austin, Texas, and watch the bats fly out from under the bridge there, was this story about bat fire bombs. And this idea actually kind of worked.
Well, this idea actually, I think, would have worked. I don't like to kind of, I call counterfactuals, like the what-ifs of history, but this is one that made a lot of sense to me. The idea was that bats naturally, as you mentioned, right under Congress Bridge in Austin, bats naturally will find cold, dry, dark places to roost during the day. And Japan is a country in World War II made up of wood and paper buildings. And so if you drop bats over Japan, they will find their way to cold, dark, dry places, which are the attics, eaves, nooks, and crannies inside these wood and paper houses inside Japan. If you affix a incendiary device, a napalm bomb, to the bat, when that goes off, it could burn Japan to the ground. And this is a concept that made a ton of sense. And actually, they tested it, and it worked in testing. They built a fake Japanese city, and they had a test where they put the bats into hibernation, and they put them, brought them from the caves to the test site. The problem is they miscalculated, and the bats had woken up before they expected them to. And so when they opened the doors of the truck, the bats flew out in every direction. But they already had the incendiary devices attached to the legs. Now, the good news is half the bats went straight to the fake Japanese test city and burned it to the ground. So it's like, geez, this works great. The bad news is the other half of the bats went to the working U.S. Army airfield that wasn't part of the test site. It was actually there to help fight the war. It had barracks. It had hangars for planes. It had a control tower, and burned that to the ground.
Goodness.
You could argue that it worked also, right? It just burned the wrong thing down. But as a proof concept, it made a ton of sense. The reason it doesn't happen is not because it wasn't a good idea. The reason it doesn't happen is because the testing came to fruition in early summer 1945, when the U.S. military was thinking about different bombs to drop on Japan to end the war.
This really no longer was the priority.
Well, it was one of these things like, why do we spend millions of dollars on this when we've already built these atomic bombs that can end the war very quickly?
Boy, it really makes you wonder what our enemies might be thinking about using on us today, and you know what we will find out about in another 50 years that the U.S. is doing these days. And real quick before you go, Vince, if you're the curator at the International Spy Museum, is it true you all have a new location now?
We do. If you've been to the museum, we bounced to the other side of the National Mall. Mm-hmm. So we're about a block and a half from the Smithsonian Castle in a play area called D.C., L'Enfant Plaza. So it's right in the middle of everything.
It's hard to miss it. I think I drove by it the other day with the big red neon on it. And
yeah, if you've driven around there, you've seen us, because we are in the middle of a bunch of brutalist architecture government buildings, and we really stand out.
Okay. Well, we'll probably send some new guests for you. It really is an interesting museum. And the book seems fascinating, too. It's Vince Houghton, the historian and curator of the International Spy Museum. His book, Nuking the Moon and Other Intelligence Schemes and Military Plots, Left on the Drawing Board. You want to check it out. Thanks, Vince.
Thank you.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.